Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 447 for October 12th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
This year's Port Ellen is exceptional. You know, I would say that, but again, having tasted the, having tasted the samples, which is probably the only time I'm going to taste it, I can say if you get hold of a bottle or get a chance to share it with friends, you should.
This week I sat down for my annual chat with Dr. Nick Morgan, Diageo's Director of Scotch Whiskey Outreach, and there's a lot going on at the world's largest whiskey producer. On this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth, we'll catch up with Nick on everything from the new Talisker Storm to this year's special releases, and try to get an answer to the burning question, just how much Port Ellen is left in the warehouses anyway. I'll also have the calendar of events, a special edition of Your Voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, my tasting notes for the Boss Hog of rye whiskeys, all on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. The plans for a new malt whiskey distillery in Fife are gaining speed. Earlier this year, local regulators in the town of Glenrothes gave the green light to plans for a distillery next to the Fife Airport. While it's been known that John Ferguson Company Limited was behind the plans for the project, little more has been said until now. India's Business Standard reports this weekend that the distillery project is being spearheaded by the Banerjee family, which owns Kindal India. Kindal built its business importing whiskies and other spirits into India, Western Asia, and Africa, and currently distributes Morrison Bowmore's whiskies in the region. Managing Director Siddharth Banerjee told the paper that the first phase of the distillery would be completed in 3 years at a cost of £6.7 million, about $10.7 million, and be ready to sell mature whiskey in 2018. The project has already been approved for about £1.8 million in Scottish government financing. Banerjee's plans include launching a new whiskey brand by the end of this year globally, with Scotch whiskey he wants to source from his partners. You'll find a link to the Business Standard report at the WhiskeyCast website. And since we're talking about India, it's been a few weeks since the last update on the Diageo United Spirits merger and the UK's Office of Fair Trading Inquiry. The OFT had been expected to issue a ruling last month on whether Diageo would have to sell off USL's White & Mackay Scotch Whiskey unit. There's no word yet on why an announcement has been delayed. The OFT has been looking into whether Diageo would gain an unfair advantage, primarily in the grain whiskey market, with the acquisition of a controlling stake in United Spirits. Diageo already owns the Cameron Bridge Grain Distillery and a 50% stake in the North British Grain Distillery. White & Mackay owns the Invergordon Grain Distillery north of Inverness. Diageo officials have repeatedly declined to comment on the inquiry until after the OFT announces its decision. Grain whiskey, of course, is the backbone of blended scotches, but bottlings of single-grain Scotch whiskies are relatively rare. William Grant & Sons is planning to change that. It's releasing a 25-year-old single grain from its Girvan Grain Distillery in southern Scotland. The move marks the distillery's 50th anniversary this year, and there are plans to create a range of Girvan single grains next year. JustDrinks.com reports Grants will add a 30-year-old Girvan and a no-age statement version to the lineup in 2014. In other news, Erin will be releasing its Millennium Casks edition later this month. I caught up with Erin's Louisa Young the other night at the Whiskey Jubilee in New York City to get the details.
At the turn of the new millennium, just before it, we decided to fill some casks on the very last day and then on the very first day. So basically on the last day of 1999 and the first day of the year 2000. So this is something where it's quite an unusual collaboration with the casks and the different, you know, obviously going from one millennium into the next.
Now, there's a charity element here too, right?
Yes, there is. On the island, we are making a donation from every bottle sold to the Aran Trust, which is a charity. We've done this before as well. It's very much sort of trying to put something back into the community, back into the island, and just to help with the regeneration. We've done it with regeneration of the footpaths before. Hill walking on the island is something very significant, and it's something that we believe is... from a small community that the island has, and we being the only distillery, then it's something that is important to us to do.
The whiskey comes from a vatting of 35 ex-bourbon barrels and 10 sherry hogsheads filled on those 2 days. Only 7,800 bottles will be available starting October 28th. Also tying whiskey into nature, High West is out with its American Prairie Reserve bourbon. The whiskey is helping to raise money to restore wildlife habitat in Montana, but High West's David Perkins told me the whiskey isn't a typical Wild West whiskey.
It's a blend of two bourbons, a six-year-old from a well-known plant in Indiana and a 10-year-old from a well-known plant in Kentucky that had the same mother at one time.
And they have the same town name, right?
Indeed, but I won't mention that, but it starts with an L. And the idea was a light, elegant bourbon, so it's very fruity. It tastes like dark cherries to me. So, but the idea was not a big, intense bourbon. Easy drinking, feminine bourbon was the goal. And it's named after the largest land preservation project of its time, the American Prairie Reserve in northeastern Montana, and 10% of the profits go to that. They're buying up 5 million acres of land the size of the state of Connecticut, and they're donating, or they're renovating it to what Lewis and Clark would have seen when they went up the Missouri River. So we're big fans of that.
I have a sample of American Prairie Reserve, and I'll have tasting notes for it soon at WhiskeyCast.com. Meanwhile, Whistle Pig Rye unveiled its newest expression the other night at the Flatiron Room in Manhattan. The Boss Hog is a single-barrel 100% rye, uncut and unfiltered. And Dave Pickerell told me this will be the start of a new range of special Whistle Pig bottlings.
The concept behind the Boss Hog is that this will be the boss. You know, we've always gone after the best tasting rye available, and so this is the best of the best. Whenever we find some truly outstanding Whistle Pig, it's going to go into the Boss Hog. It'll always be a limited release, and this first release is absolutely rye in all its glory. You know, we've taken it a step farther. You know, it was a little gutsy putting it in the bottle at 134 proof, but it just gives you the opportunity to play with it like it deserves. You know, to really, really, really enjoy the fullness of the rye.
Tell me how you came to the decision to release it at barrel proof, because you had to do some experimenting first, right?
You know, when I set proof, you know, normally my kitchen turns into the mad scientist den, because I'll take the native product at barrel proof, and then I'll just cut and start weeding out. No, that's too hot, that's too weak, you know. And the idea is find the proof that carries the taste perfectly. So when I got this out of the barrel, we said, well, let's have a look here. And so I tasted it, and the first thing was I was astounded because I didn't get an alcohol burn in the back of my throat. So I said, well, before we start the exercise, let's play a little bit. So I just put a drop of water in it. And when I did, it peeled back a layer of the spice, and it was still interesting. So I put another drop of water in, it peeled back a little bit more spice. And I kept going, and pretty soon the spices were peeled back, and then the winter fruit starts peeling through. And then eventually we got leather, and there was one spot that was just amazing. It was like somebody ground up some dark chocolate and put it in their hand and just blew it right in my face. And it was just a little whoof of dark chocolate. And you know, and I realized I'd been playing with this for like half an hour, and I thought, you know, if I'm having so much fun with this, everybody else should have the ability to have fun with this too. And so we just said, you know, the heck with it, let's just put it in at barrel proof and let's have some fun.
24 barrels, obviously going to be very limited for this first batch. Where will it be available?
Good question. It'll be available generally where we've got it allocated out across the country. So wherever Whistle Pig's sold, you need to get in and talk to your guys right away and tell them you want it so that they can make sure they get their order in. You know, I was just up in Breckenridge, Colorado last weekend, and one account ordered two cases, and they wanted to make sure that they got their fair share, because there was only like 50 going into all of Colorado, or something like all of Colorado. And so So people are already placing orders for it. So if you want it, get your name on the list at your local liquor store and tell them, make sure you get it for me.
And you also work with a lot of other craft distillers as well. What else are you working on? I know you were up in Minnesota on a project a few weeks ago.
Oh, that one's going to be a lot of fun. That one's a Far North Distillery. We just built a really cool still. It's a still that's designed to do a little bit of everything, but including doing some rum. So it's a little bit taller than most of the stills that I built. And Mike Swanson and I built the thing in one day from parts, and it was a nice hard day's work. It was a 500-gallon still with a deflagmator and a couple sets of four-tray column pieces and a standalone condenser and everything. And it was a fair amount of work getting it all together. But that one will start up. It's going to be in about a week and a half. We'll start commercial production on that facility.
And what else are you working on?
We've got Hill Rock, obviously, that's coming along. We just released a double cask rye on Hill Rock. Really excited about that. I suspect that given the initial response, that even as well received as our Solera bourbon is, I think the double cask rye might actually pass it in demand.
By the way, plans are still in the works to build a distillery at Whistle Pig Farm in Vermont. Whistle Pig's investors are facing a roadblock from the state's Natural Resources Board over the environmental permits needed for the distillery. Earlier this year, we heard from Karen Luna Ostaseski about her plans to start her own blended Scotch whiskey brand, Sia. Got word this week that the first cases of Sia are ready to go on sale at whiskey shops in the San Francisco area soon. In that same episode, we heard from Allison Patel of Bren Whiskey. While the French single malt is only sold in the U.S., it just might show up on the shelf soon at one of Glasgow's best whiskey bars. I ran into Paul McDonough of the Bon Accord at the Whiskey Jubilee, right in front of Allison's table where she was pouring Bren.
What are you doing in New York City, Paul?
Drinking whiskey, Mark, obviously. I flew over for the both whiskey festivals, for the Jubilee and the New York Whiskey Festival, so I thought I'd spread my wings and get about and meet some new people within the trade, so that's why I'm here.
You finding anything interesting over here that you're not seeing in Scotland?
Well, this one I'm just drinking just now, it's an absolutely fantastic whiskey. The French, finished in cognac casks. I'm really pleased with that, so I'll maybe be taking a bottle of that back home with me.
Do you find that there are whiskies that you can't get in Scotland that you can get when you travel around?
Well, there's some, if you go to the duty-frees, it's duty-free only, so you can pick up a couple of different expressions that they don't have. I think a lot of the time they try them in duty-free to see how they go, and if the sales are quite good, they'll put them out as a release that the bars can pick up. So,
now, you recently won Pub of the Year in one of the UK competitions, right?
Yes, that's right. That was a great honour to get. That was a good pub guide. Best whiskey bar in the UK. Last year we won the best whiskey bar in Scotland, so that's absolutely fantastic. Really pleased with that.
Now, when you got the news about this year's, did you at least buy a round for the house?
I did that, but there was only two people in at the time.
Typical Scotsman, right?
Well, this is it, you know. But I just bought a new bottle there 2 weeks ago, and it's a 70-year-old Glenlivet from Gordon McPhail's. So before I flew out to New York, I decided to open up on Monday night, and it was absolutely fantastic.
I've had that one. It is wonderful.
Yeah, it's one of the whiskies that you'll never forget. And that's what's great about this trade. I've been working the trade for 30 years, and I'm still coming up with young whiskies, old whiskies. They're all good. They're all good. There's always one for every day of the week.
You can get a look at the Bon Accord on WhiskeyCast HD. Just check the HD section of the website. It's also available on YouTube and through iTunes. And finally, I don't usually point out a lot of bar promotions on WhiskeyCast, but the guys at the Brandy Library in New York City's Tribeca neighborhood are doing something really special. Starting this Monday and through November 13th, they'll be donating all of the proceeds from their American whiskey sales to the ALS Association's Parker Beams Promise of Hope Fund. That's a very generous gesture. Next time around, I'll have the results of this weekend's Bonhams auction for one of the rarest bourbons ever, the two bottles of Master Distillers Unity that are being auctioned off Sunday at Bonhams to raise money for the Promise of Hope Fund. Of course, you can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, continuing the Caskmasters project. You've helped us choose the whiskey, and you've helped us choose the name. Next, help us choose the packaging. Sign up online at glenmorangie.com.
The holidays will be here before you know it. If you're looking for something to give the whiskey lover in your life or just want something for yourself, I'm donating 20% of all exhibition print sales in the Whiskey Cast Photo Gallery through the end of 2013 to the Promise of Hope Fund, and there's free shipping worldwide on any order over $200 through December 15th. You'll find the gallery in the pub section at whiskeycast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park. Instead of reading emails and posts this week, I thought it might be fun to let you hear from some whiskey lovers about what's bugging them these days. Single Cask Nation's Whiskey Jubilee in New York City Thursday night brought a full house to the West Side Jewish Center, and there were no shortage of opinions that night. Turner Moore flew up from Sarasota, Florida for the Whiskey Jubilee and Whiskey Fest New York this weekend.
What bugs me the most is living in Florida, I have limited access to quality whiskey. I shouldn't say all quality whiskey. I have limited access to some things that I want. Old malt cask and Chieftains are not available in Florida. So more distribution, more representation in our state. Florida is a growing whiskey market. All the tastings that I do, we have a sellout crowd. More and more people are getting to know whiskey in Florida. More Japanese whiskey. When I mention Japanese whiskey, people just look stunned. They've never heard of such a thing. So we can always find Yamazaki, but you know, there's no Chichibu, Hakushu, Takatsuru, and so forth. So more brands, more cask strength whiskey, more choices.
Mandy Berkowitz is another voice asking for more choices.
With the internet, everybody hears about everything, but it's really not accessible. And even when it is accessible, if you live in a big market like I do, like New York, you really have to make a really large investment to just get into it at the first time. And it's really hard to like drop that much money on such a large bottle when you've never tasted before and you don't even know what you're getting into. It would be great if you can get like samplers or smaller bottles from some of these places. And then really, like, they kind of will hook you in when you get that, because if you taste something and you like it, you don't care how much you'll spend on it. You'll just buy it.
Does the no age statement issue bother you at all?
I don't think so, because ultimately you have to judge based on your taste buds and based on your nose, right? Like, you can have a blind tasting and you'll find something that you like, and it could turn out to be the $10 bottom shelf bottle. It doesn't matter. You're going to like it. You're going to want to drink it forever. So really what's written on the label, what's the description, isn't really as important as what you actually get to taste. And that goes back to what I said. My biggest complaint is that it's hard to taste some of these things unless you go to these big festivals.
The issue of no age statement whiskeys may not be as divisive as much of the chatter from internet pundits makes it seem to be. Let's hear now from Neil Firetog, Kelly Levinson, and Adam Mimran.
The fact is that they're being innovative. We're coming up with some very, very nice blends, very nice innovations. The Virgin Oak, I think that the number of the distilleries are using now are just creating such great new drams for us to taste. It's just fantastic. Really just so imaginative that they're bringing in great ideas, great tastes, and giving the consumer a wide variety of just wonderful drams to try.
It gives the distillers a lot more freedom to actually come up with different expressions and opportunity to grow within the category. And not specifically with a certain designate of age or vintage.
It's a shame to see no age statement bottles surpassing in like price, that is, a price of like a 10-year-old or 12-year-old. And you see a lot of that being phased out, which isn't really fair, but it's understandable seeing how demand is so hard to fill. And I mean, again, nobody could predict how much the Scotch whiskey industry has boomed over the years, especially in foreign markets and everything. But I would say no age statement bottles being priced at astronomical costs. I would say that.
Do you think no age statement whiskeys are inferior to age statements?
Absolutely not. No, I'm not a big believer that a 5-year-old whiskey is worse than a 30-year-old whiskey. I mean, if you even pick up a magazine like Whiskey Advocate, you'll see a lot of older whiskeys having horrible ratings and a lot of younger whiskeys or no age statement whiskeys having very high rating. If you take I remember reading about a Macallan, like it was probably 30, 35 years old, something like that, and it was rated 77, but an Ardbeg Corvecian and Ardbeg Ugadal are rated 97 and 96. So you see a lot of that, and I think it's a very big misconception. My problem isn't with no age statement, it's with the price being so high.
That's Adam Mimran. Before him, Kelly Levinson, and we started off with Neil Firetog. If you'd like to add your voice to the conversation, you can post your comments on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com, or you can email me. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice segment is brought to you by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Whiskey Live Los Angeles is coming up Wednesday night, along with Whiskey Live Toronto on November 1st. The Balvenie's Rare Craft Collection Roadshow hits Chicago this week at the East River Arts Center. The annual Wild Whiskey Weekend is this coming weekend at the Hotel Falster in Nykøbing Falster, Denmark. The Green Island Pub in Zeitz, Germany will host a Kilhoman tasting October 20th. The Philadelphia Whiskey Festival is coming up on October 24th. Whiskey Live South Africa hits Soweto from the 24th through the 26th. Ward 3 in New York City has a Four Roses tasting set for October 28th. And the Oslo Whiskey Festival in Norway is November 1st and 2nd. Those are just some of the upcoming whiskey events around the world. You'll find a searchable list of more than 250 different events on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. If you missed the Laphroaig Live webcast a couple of weeks ago, visit Laphroaig.com and watch the replay. And while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Tim Brennan, retired engineering supervisor, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I've worked with Irish distillers for 40 years. I was born in Middleton and went to school in Middleton and then joined a company in 1971. Traditions in the old distillery were if you were involved in a very dirty job, you then got a half glass of Redbreast. They were the perks in the old distillery. We had one guy there who was particularly fond of his glass of Redbreast. And in order to go to the manager of the warehouse, he would get a really dirty bag of dust and he'd shake it over himself so that he looked so dirty. And he would head off over to the manager and say, "Mr. Daly, here I am. I've had a terrible dirty job for the morning. Look at the cut of me. Any chance of getting a half one?" And he'd duly get his half one, come back, change his clothes, and he was fine again.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, no Redbreast.
Last time around, I mentioned the U.S. debut of Talisker Storm at Whiskey Live Boston. Diageo master blender Maureen Robinson created the rougher, tougher version of Talisker initially for the European market last year. Diageo's head of Scotch whiskey outreach, Dr. Nick Morgan, is in New York this week. We sat down for a chat over a glass of Talisker Storm for this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth.
We launched very successfully in Europe, actually. Anyone that's had a look at the blogs and comments on bulletin boards will see that the liquid was really well received. And it was always part of the plan that the brand would be rolled out globally once we got it embedded in Europe and once we got sort of supply sorted out for the liquid. So United States is part of that, and it will be going to other markets as well once we got it rooted down here.
And how soon will it be available? I know it's starting to roll out at some of the whiskey shows. It was at Whiskey Live Boston last week. And how soon can we expect to see it at stores?
Well, it's hitting the shelves as we speak. So if you look out for it in your local liquor store over the next couple of weeks in the U.S., you'll see it there.
Now, tell me what Maureen was thinking when she created this one, because I know the goal was to sort of amp up the base Talisker blends. that go into the into those single malts, to go the vattings there, and to take those and sort of turn it up to 11 almost, right?
That's right, Spinal Tap style. It's probably easiest to think of it as the double black of Talisker. So with Johnnie Walker Double Black, we took that idea of smokiness and simply dialed that up to quite an extreme point, really, for Johnnie Walker. What we did with Talisker was take the idea of the maritime character, which covers a sort of variety of sins or a variety of tasting notes, if you will, but it includes the smoky, iodine, medicinal style of the Talisker sort of flavor profile, and just dial that one up. So it's a far more intense version of the standard Talisker that drinkers will be used to. And I guess, as with Johnnie Walker Double Black, some Talisker drinkers are going to really like that, and others will just be very happy to stick with regular Talisker. But I think one of the key pieces of thinking behind it was that it was an affordable innovation. So at a time when so many Scotch whisky innovations tend to be out of the price reach of many people because they're old and rare liquids and all of that great stuff, we wanted to produce something that was different that the regular Talisker drinker could afford and enjoy. And I think that's what we've done with Talisker Storm.
Now, how would this fit into that sensory experience that you guys were working on with the Singleton and the study that was released this week showing that where you're tasting whiskey does make a difference in theory, right?
Okay, well, that's an interesting piece of work, and maybe it's not so surprising, but the academics that we were working with there discovered through the research, or confirmed maybe through the research, that environment, broadly speaking, can influence the way you perceive flavors. So whether it's colors, textures in a room, shape of the glass, all of those things add up to the way that certain key flavors can be accentuated and picked up by regular drinkers. And I think, clearly with Talisker Storm, I think you need to be on the deck of a boat in a force 8 gale. That's really the environment for getting the full sensorium experience on this liquid.
But most of us will never be on a boat in a serious gale to have that experience. So how do you work it in when you don't have all that sea air hitting you in the face?
In the bathroom with someone throwing a bucket of water at you is probably the nearest you'll get.
Tell me what the scientists were looking for in that experiment they did with the Singleton, because that was one that just came out this week, as I mentioned earlier. And a lot of folks will find that interesting because we all have our own various ways of tasting whiskey, our own various environments. How did they do this study?
Well, they did a number of different pieces of research. One was a sort of semi-public piece of research that was run in London. And an experience was created in a house in central London, different rooms decorated, designed in different ways. Drinkers were asked to go through and taste whiskies in each of those rooms and then report back what tastes and what flavors they found were most prominent in the different areas. That was also backed up by quite a serious piece of lab research, as it were, which was carried out at the University of Oxford, which is where Professor Charles Spence is based. And I think this whole area of sensory research is something that many whiskey drinkers perhaps might not be aware of, but it's a huge growth area, both from an academic perspective and, frankly, also from a commercial perspective, because the findings that these guys are coming up with can very easily influence, for example, decisions you might make about packaging, about glassware you might put into a bar, even about how you might design a bar if you want to accentuate the characters of certain particular drinks. You might sponsor a bar and make sure it's going to deliver against, you know, the taste profile you want consumers to experience.
Let's move over to the special releases for this year, because those are still in the pipeline and coming, but we know what they are. The one that intrigued me the most was the Kalila, the Stichel edition, honoring Billy Stichel and his entire family, because Billy's retiring here in a few months. And that's one of the few times that we've seen a Diageo whiskey named for an individual or an individual family of distillers. And it's got to be an honor for Billy and the entire family.
Yes, I think you're right, Mark, actually. I mean, we have celebrated Ian MacArthur's role at Lagavulin in the special bottlings we've done there for the Isla Festival, because Ian always chooses the casks and signs the labels for those. What we wanted to do with the Kalila, which is another bottling of our unpeated Kalila, so it's quite an unusual Highland style of liquid. But we really felt that, by coincidence, not design, it was simply a great opportunity to acknowledge the fact that Billy has been at Kalila for almost 40 years. His family have been there for several generations, both at Kalila and other distilleries around and about there. And in these days, that's a pretty unique contribution, I think, to the industry. And as we look forward, we'll probably be an even more unusual occurrence. And I don't think you can let that pass without acknowledging it, even if it is a sort of exceptional thing for us to do.
So the story is even more exceptional, or as exceptional as the whiskey, right?
Well, Billy, if you know him, is a sort of pretty exceptional person, although it's hard to get him to speak to say that. He's very shy as well. But certainly in my career at Diageo over 20 odd or more years, he's been incredibly helpful and generous in his knowledge. So it's not too difficult to be generous back, I think.
Has his replacement been named yet?
Yes, it has. I'm not sure if it's been widely publicly announced, but David Wood's going to take over as site operations manager there, and I know he's down there now learning the tricks of the trade from Billy.
And what's his background?
His background actually is working at Lagavulin, and then prior to that in whiskey retailing. So he's actually quite new to production work, but in a sense, strangely, his career path mirrors that of Georgie Crawford, who also came out of retailing into distilling, so as president for that.
And of course, Georgie runs Lagavulin these days. And if I remember correctly, one of the other special releases is the oldest distillery bottling of Lagavulin on record.
Yeah, that's the Lagavulin 37-year-old, which is I was lucky enough to taste the samples when we were selecting liquids. So that's a really interesting Lagavulin expression. Although I would say to people, don't expect to find Lagavulin 16-year-old dialed up there, because Lagavulin ages gracefully, very gracefully, but it certainly mellows out a lot. And if what you like about Lagavulin is the really big peat experience, you're more likely to find that in the 16-year-old or in the 12-year-old special release, which is the Cask Strength limited edition we produce every year.
What's the most unusual one of the releases this year? I know there was the usual Brora, the usual Port Ellens, the usual Kleinleash. What was the unusual one this year?
Well, I think the really unusual one is the Convoy Moore 36. It's a very little-known distillery. The single malt was never widely bottled. I don't think we ever bottled it as a single malt in Diageo or United Distillers or DCL before that. So for single malt enthusiasts, it's quite a rarity to taste any Convoy Moore. This one is a 36-year-old that's matured really well in casks, very luckily, because 36-year-old is venerable for a whiskey, and it will be a very, I think, interesting experience for anyone that's lucky enough to taste it.
And I'm trying to make sure I have the geography right. If you're heading down Dufftown, following the railroad tracks along that hiking trail that goes down to Craigellachie, you first pass Balvenie, then Glenfiddich as you're going through there, and then Convoy Moore along the railroad tracks. It's the closed one, right?
That's correct. And I think, in fact, that Glenfiddich used some of the old Convoy Moore buildings for warehousing and stuff like that. Yeah, but the distillery is long gone.
Anything else you can add that I didn't ask about?
I don't think so. Just to say that this year's Port Ellen is exceptional. I would say that, but again, having tasted the samples, which is probably the only time I'm going to taste it, I can say if you get hold of a bottle or get a chance to share it with friends, you should.
Yeah, the prices for these are a little higher this year than usual. I know you didn't have anything to do with that, but seems like the price jump for some of these whiskeys has hit almost stratospheric levels.
Well, I know that pricing in malt whiskey can polarize people in terms of opinions. But I have to say, Mark, I do think this very honestly, if you think about what you're getting in one of those bottles of Port Ellen and think about the very genuine rarity and scarcity of that, think about the quality of the liquid, which, as I've said, is exceptional, then think about how other things are priced, which you might put in a similar bracket, then actually Port Ellen comes out as not being unreasonable by any standards.
Okay, it's been 30 years now since Port Ellen closed. How much more do you guys have left in 2013? It's been 30 years now. How much more do you have left in the warehouses?
we never discuss our inventory position. It's quite clear we don't have a lot left. We've reduced the amount we're bottling by half. We did that a couple of years ago just to make sure we've got a bit longer with it. We're very lucky at the moment that the quality is being maintained, and that's the really important thing. It's not how old this stuff is. It's whether it's still good enough to put in the bottle. And at the moment, it is. And each year when we pull samples, we have our fingers crossed to make sure that we're still in that that position. If we are, then we've got a few years to go yet. But it's like everything else. Like you and me, Mark, one day we're not going to be here.
And we'll find out when the annual release comes out. If we don't see a Port Ellen on there, we'll realize you guys have run out, right?
Yeah, that more or less. Or we've got to the point where the quality is not good enough for single malt bottling.
What would you do with it then, though?
Whiskies that are not necessarily 100% for single malt bottlings can be 100% for blends.
I'm stunned here. You're going to take it theoretically. Let's just play theoretically, hypothetically here. The last casks of Port Ellen and put them into a blend.
Just shows you how good blended scotch is, Mark.
The special releases are expected to be out in a few weeks. I'll have tasting notes for as many of them as I can at WhiskeyCast.com, hopefully including that Port Ellen. That's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. Listen next week for a chat with Morrison Beaumont's Ian McCallum. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with the Talisker Storm. It's bottled at 45.8% ABV. The nose is smoky and peppery with touches of creosote, black pepper, ginger root, honey, and a soft brininess. The taste is spicy and thick with black pepper and a hint of cinnamon, peat smoke, honey, and vanilla notes, with a brininess that shows up as the spices start to fade and lasts through the finish, along with subtle peatiness and a hint of pepper. I'm scoring the Talisker Storm a 92. Kilhoman's 100% Islay third release is 4 years old, bottled at 50% ABV. It was matured in bourbon casks, and the nose has a mild peatiness, along with honey, vanilla, and a hint of heather. The taste has a good peaty burst with a sharp bite at first, then fades slowly to reveal hints of honey, oak, and vanilla. The finish has a lingering peatiness with honey, oak, and vanilla notes. It's a very consistent whiskey, and I'm scoring the Kilhoman 100% Islay third release an 88. Finally, let's look at the Boss Hog from Whistle Pig Rye. As Dave Pickerel told us earlier, it's uncut and bottled at barrel strength. In this case, a whopping 67.25% ABV. The nose is spicy, aromatic, and woody with toasted oak, roasted almonds, allspice, and some brown sugar sweetness. The taste has an intense blast of spices, but without overpowering the sweet brown sugar and molasses notes underneath. The spicy notes include allspice, curry powder, and marjoram. The finish is long and lingering, with the spices fading away slowly. Water opens up the sweetness on the palate while barely muting the spicy touches. This is one you'll want to sip slowly. It's a beast. I'm scoring Whistle Pig Rye's The Boss Hog a 94. I'm adding these tasting notes to the searchable list of more than 1,000 different whiskeys at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, including this month's tasting panel, recorded on location in Ottawa, Canada, tasting a flight of Canadian whiskeys. The website also has our calendar of events, the latest whiskey news, the photo gallery, and our bookstore powered by Amazon.com, along with a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. And my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.